Starborn Support presents the 4th Annual Experience Your Speak Conference, a UFO conference focused on the abductee experience phenomenon, featuring well-known speakers in the field, August 28th and 29th at Fireside Inn & Suites, Portland. There's no other conference just for and about experiencers. What you hear and see will leave you speechless. To register and find out more info, visit experienceyourspeak.yolasite.com. Experience Your Speak Conference, Friday, August 28th and Saturday, August 29th, Fireside Inn & Suites, Riverside Street, Portland. That's experienceyourspeak.yolasite.com.
And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. We have Alejandro Rojas coming up in just a minute. Before that, our guest tonight is John Kelly. He's from Vancouver. His website is yourinnervoice.com. Interesting guy. We had him on early in the show about 3 years ago, and I thought he was interesting enough to ask back. He'll be on for 2 hours. We're able to take calls. That's at 603-967-4030. You can jump in the chat room, too, and ask some questions. I want to thank all the supporters. We had a lot of supporters last week come aboard. I thank you very much. Now, I did say that, and I will stick true to my word, I'm going to send out T-shirts to anyone who supports for $10 or more a month. The question I have for the people, and you're welcome to email me at martin@podcastufo.com, is I'm having new graphics made down in New York City. A person down there is making a new graphic, going to make a really nice T-shirt. I can send the ones I have now, or you can wait for the better ones. It's up to you. Let me know. Send me an email. And we appreciate every single listener, whether you can help us out or not, but for only a dollar or more per month, you can listen to the second part of the show. And that's enough babbling for me this evening, and now it's time to bring on the missing. He's been missing for 2 weeks. He's back. Alejandro Rojas, how are you?
Good, but I'm not talking unless you promise me a T-shirt. It's a strike.
You mean, didn't I give you one?
I want one of these new ones.
Oh, okay. Well, they're not made yet. The graphics are being drawn up right now as we speak.
When they are made, will I get one? I better, or I'm not. I'm done.
Oh yeah, sure, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. See, I learned that from striking, from the unions and this sort. So I'm a one man UFO news union.
Are you paying your union dues?
I do.
Okay, we all do.
Yes, we all pay our dues.
That's right.
I pay my UFO dues by putting up stories. And then having trolls come around. And no, actually, there's more than just trolls. There are lots of very, very, very pleasant people that are fun to talk to. But, yeah, so these are some interesting stories. And I think, you know, you and I talked a bit about them on Monday, a couple of them.
Before we get going on that, I just wanted to ask you, right now I've heard the Perseid, I don't know how to say that, the meteor shower that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that it's really, really great in Arizona. Have you had a chance to check it out?
I have not. We have had haboobs and burst, what they call them, like a, something like a burst storm, microburst, that's what they call them.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Weather has been really weird. Today it's great. But yesterday in the morning, we had this rain and this haboob that came through. And a haboob, if you don't know, I mean, there was that movie with the horse. They're always really worse on TV where people die and everything. But they're dust, a big dust storm that comes through. And they're usually accompanied by wind. And they're really weird because there's usually lightning. And I didn't know this, inside of these storms, because it's these big
static
dust clouds, are creating all these static. So there's lightning going back and forth, and it's really wild. But yeah, we had one of those yesterday that was accompanied by some really strong winds, and that was at nighttime. So I hurriedly went into my home and cowered in a corner. And actually, wow. I think I looked at emails and stuff regarding this exciting UFO story I'm going to talk to you about. So we didn't have much visibility yesterday, but hopefully we will today, and that would be great to see, because I hear you can literally see hundreds in an hour if you're in a good place where you don't have a lot of light. Anyone, anywhere. I mean, there's so many of them that they might even be able to see them once in a while in New York City in between the skyscrapers.
Yeah, we've had really bad weather here in Maine for the last several days, but it's just clearing out tonight. So after the show, I might take a look.
You should. That'd be really exciting. And it would be interesting to see if there are more UFO reports. I wouldn't doubt that would be the case.
You know, a lot of people would say, oh, yeah, there's, people's imaginations or whatever. But when you get more eyes in the sky, you never know. That's how I feel.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So what's going on for news? And welcome back.
Yeah, thank you very much. It was a very nice, relaxing break. I got to hang out at the beach and also go on a ghost tour in San Diego, so that was a lot of fun. But as far as UFO stuff, some of the stuff I've posted since, this is a story from Roger Marsh from MUFON. This was submitted to MUFON, and this is a weird video, and you had brought it up on my show about a UFO video in Indonesia. It was actually allegedly recorded on my birthday, July 17th, over Jakarta, and it's kind of weird. You see this strange, really, it's hard to see object that's kind of floating in the sky. You would think at first it's a balloon or something mundane, but then it has kind of these weird movements back and forth. One strange thing is that the witness says it moves slowly at a constant speed, but in the video you can certainly see that that's not the case, that it kind of makes this weird movement. The weird movement makes me think maybe it's a hoax, but I'm not sure. They say that MUFON is investigating, but kind of an interesting video there. You thought it was pretty interesting, right?
I still do, but the unfortunate thing is anything can be faked these days, and it would be a shame if that one in particular is, because it really does show something pretty wild. And these links will be in our show notes. That'll take you over to openminds.tv, where the articles are, and you can actually watch the video over there.
Yeah. Come on over and sit a spell and watch UFO videos with us. We got more than that one, but it's not a UFO, and we got an exciting one I'm going to talk about next or after this story. But I just want to bring this story up because I think it's really cool, and it's kind of silly in a way, in that it's a story that has been pushed recently by The Telegraph and The Daily Express, two UK newspapers that write about UFOs often, especially The Daily Express. They've been writing about UFOs practically every day. I think it has been every day for the last few months. And thankfully, they have written about open mind stories. The reason I'm bringing this up is that, we often talk about how the news doesn't do their due diligence. And for some reason, The Telegraph and The Daily Express is talking about these new released UFO files from Scotland Yard, essentially. The UK Metropolitan Police is their technical name. Actually, Dr. David Clark, who's a lecturer in journalism at Sheffield Hallam University, says he got these via FOIA in 2005. So he's the reason that these documents got released, and he wrote about them in a book, and he put them out in 2005. I don't know why the Daily Express and Telegraph are saying they're new, but he was writing about the Special Branch. They're in charge of national security. They're part of Scotland Yard, and they've been investigating UFOers. More recently, they've been investigating UFO enthusiasts, especially since 97 and 98, and this was due to Heaven's Gate, that group where they committed suicide, they decided these guys committed suicide, so they ought to start watching these people who are into UFOs and stuff just in case, you know, there's any more cults being created. So they're looking at people who watch the X-Files and Star Trek, you know, those Trekkies, which, you know, often Trekkies are very strange. I think you'd probably agree with that. But aren't you?
Well, no, I'm kind of laughing because I had Roger Nygaard, who did a documentary called The Trekkies. And he was on the show. He's actually a skeptic, and so he's on one of my shows. But if you watch that show, it's on Netflix, called Trekkies. You really
I've heard about that.
Yeah, you do see some very some real characters for sure. Absolutely.
And I'm kidding because I'm a bit of a Trekkie myself, definitely. And, you know, one of the other shows they watch, you probably had Bryce Zabel on, I think, but a friend, he's written a book with Richard Dolan, a great guy. He did a TV series called Dark Skies that was kind of an answer to X-Files. I think it was NBC. I should have looked this up. I keep forgetting. And it was about MJ-12 and everything. But that was listed in their documents as well. So they didn't find anything, essentially, but they had decided to keep an eye on him in these official records. What's also interesting, and they called it, you know, ufologists, that they were looking at ufologists. But what's really cool, older files also show that they kept an eye on other UFO organizations, mainly because they thought they might be related to communists. Because as you probably know, you know, in the 50s, there were lots of contactees. And the contactees were talking about, you know, we shouldn't use nukes and we need, you know, peace and love. And they thought, you know, and of course, right wingers, anytime you talk about peace and love, they think, uh-oh, these are communists. So that's kind of what happened. And the right wingers actually got the police involved with looking at, especially at one cult in particular, and I hesitate to call it a cult because really that's kind of a negative sort of term if you look it up these days. But this was a UFO religion essentially that had started, called the Artharians. It started by a guy named George King, who said he was channeling aliens, an alien called Artharius, and they even let him do this on TV in like the late 50s. So they were being watched to see if perhaps they were being, you know, they were communists and pushing a communist kind of movement. But their movement was not so much about communism. It was about no nukes, and it was also about releasing UFO information. So according to Dr. Clark, these were the first people to have a UFO disclosure march. And this happened also in the late 50s. Yeah, kind of interesting.
I had no idea. Wow.
Yeah, the first people to do it. And so they were some UFO activists. And supposedly, I guess, some of the people from the special branch went there to watch. I guess there were a lot of people that were watching. But once the guy started giving his speeches, everybody went away and they lost interest.
So was there a little 4-year-old Stephen Bassett there?
There might have been. I don't know. No, but I doubt it. This was quite some time ago. I don't know how old he is, but
right, it was
who knows? Maybe
it was kind of a joke, but yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I realized it was a joke.
Okay.
But
all right. I really screwed that up. I'm going to edit that.
You don't have to. Leave it in.
All right. Okay.
I dare you.
I'll leave all of this in, I promise.
Whoa,
all
nice.
Right, I'm not going to edit one thing in this news.
You got to be bold.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, if I do the news pre-recorded like this and I don't edit it, it's just as good as being live, I think.
Yeah, then it's really the same thing because I try to do very, very little editing at all because I like it to have that live feel. And those awkward pauses, like, you know, because sometimes I know how you are. I will pause and not say anything on purpose so that you kind of squirm there and
yeah.
Then you giggle or something. And I'm very entertained by your reaction and your uneasiness. And so I hope the audience is as well.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
The last story, though, this has been the excitement for the last couple of days for me. And actually, I've been sort of keeping my eye on this story for like a year, a long time. And I mean behind the scenes kind of look, not just what everybody else had seen, because we had written about this. But this has to do with a video that was released, that was leaked. That allegedly had come from the Department of Homeland Security, and it's from Puerto Rico. And it's you see this FLIR, you know, and you see all the telemetry like you would have from a military or law enforcement kind of video following this object. Now, this video, a poor copy of this video was released about a year ago. It was somehow leaked. This Puerto Rican UFO researcher got it, put it online, but he had the information all wrong. He said it was a helicopter. He said all this stuff, and there was very little data that came along with it. You just had the video, and this guy thought it was a helicopter. And there was some back and forth. Then, actually, a few months ago, a higher resolution was posted by John Greenwald from the Black Vault, because he received a high-resolution copy with an anonymous letter. And it turns out some of the details in this anomalous letter were accurate. So this person had some inside knowledge. So I suspect personally that whoever gave this to Greenwald was someone from this base. And it seems that people on this base were really excited about this video. The person who emailed Greenwald also emailed these researchers that I'm going to refer to in a minute that I've been working with. And they said in their letter, this is proof that there's aliens, there's an alien base in Puerto Rico, kind of interesting. But what happened is these guys have been working on this whole time for over a year. There's a group of researchers that were approached by a witness, and that's all I can say. And this witness was an acquaintance of the pilot who worked for the Customs and Borders Patrol, which is a department of the Homeland Security in Puerto Rico. So this pilot and his crew were flying in a routine flight. They circled around the airport a couple times, but when they took off for their flight, they saw a light over the ocean to the north. They called it into the tower because the tower didn't tell them that there was any traffic in the area. The tower said, "We don't see anything on radar. However, we have a visual of that object as well." When the object came close to the coast, the lights turned off, and luckily it's about that time that the aircraft, which is a DHC-8, a Dash-8 is kind of the name for this thing, the nickname for it. It's a propeller plane, fixed wing. It had a FLIR system on it, a thermal imaging system. And at the time that the lights went off, it was able to begin tracking this object. So they flew around the base a couple times and then moved out to the south, all the while tracking this object. They tracked it for a little less than 3 minutes, and this high-resolution video was then shared with these researchers. And they investigated it for over a year to research who these people are, to verify that it did come from Homeland Security, which they have verified. They also did a FOIA to get radar data to see if the radars were detecting the object. They were not, but they did detect the DHC-8, the Border Patrol craft, of course. And that was helpful because even though there's telemetry in this video showing where the aircraft is, this just verifies that, you know, that's not a hoax, that someone didn't hoax this video and it's all an elaborate CGI. It verifies that plane was in that place at that time. The pilot also, or the acquaintance to the pilot, who is the main source for these guys, said that there was a plane that was delayed taking off from this airport because it was an airport this object flew over because of this unknown in the area. And in the flight logs, you can indeed see there was a plane that was delayed at that exact time. Hmm. So everything that the witness had said all checked out. These guys were able to verify this was an acquaintance of the pilot, that this guy, they didn't disclose where this guy worked, but they said he was someone who would be in the know. They were able to verify all of this. And, you know, you kind of got to then trust the researchers and that they've done a good job verifying that. But these are people I've known for years. They're some of the best, I think, researchers in this field. So,
are you able to disclose who they are?
Yes, I can, because now they've released this document. Just yesterday they released it, and luckily they let me have a preview so I could write a story and summarize it so I could help them get the word out and tell people about them releasing it. But they released their 162-page analysis, and I've summarized it in my story. But the people are – a lot of them work with MUFON, although this was done outside of MUFON, and they want to be very clear about that. And mostly this is, it's because the witnesses didn't want it to be part of MUFON. The witnesses are very scared about any repercussions, so they only wanted a very few people to be involved. This was first given to – a lady who's actually a MUFON investigator, and she's also a famous Cuban-born science fiction and fantasy writer. She's like the best-selling Cuban fantasy and science fiction writer, I believe, but she's very popular. Dana Chaviano is her name. She was the first one that was approached by their source. So she went to essentially her MUFON boss, which is Morgan Biel. I don't know if you've talked to him. He's the Florida MUFON guy who runs that chapter there. And they decided then to put together a small group of friends, including Rich Hoffman, who works in the defense industry. He's also a MUFON state director, I think, for Alabama. I forget which state. And then they also got involved Robert Powell, who is the director of research for MUFON. They got a couple other guys involved also with some science background. One of them is a physicist. And so this was the core group that did this long investigation. And they determined what the witnesses believed and had said. The witnesses said this thing had flown from the ocean over the airport and then back out into the ocean, and that it went through the water, and that it moved very quickly through the water and then split in two. That's what the thermal imaging video appears to show. This group did some research to figure out where this object was and its flight path in order to determine its speed, and they determined that it was going around 80 miles per hour on average, but at times it was going 100 plus in the air and through the water, that it went into the water and barely slowed down at all. There, you can barely see, I think, a couple light splashes when it's by the water. But, I mean, that's what it appears this thing's doing. So it's really strange. A lot of investigators and researchers have looked at this. Prior to this report coming out, there was a lot of speculation, and a lot of people who had done some research based solely off the video and the telemetry in the video. Some of those researchers, not all of them, but some like Mark D'Antonio and at least one or two other people I've seen online, determined that the object was a balloon. What they said was that the aircraft is moving around this object. So the background is moving very quickly. So even though it looks like the object is moving quickly, it's not. It's moving very slowly, and it's just a balloon.
Can I just interrupt you right there?
Mm-hmm.
I that's the first thing I thought when I watched the video, too, except when it gets to the water. That doesn't make any sense when it comes to what it is doing in the water. It's like going in and out of the water, barely making splashes, and moving really fast. So I agree, when it's up in the air, the first thing I thought, well, it looks like it could be a balloon turning and twisting, and possibly the background from an aircraft being going by it. You know, it could make it look like it was moving faster than it was.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you explain, how would Mark D'Antonio, and I'm glad to hear that he's at it again, but how would he explain it going through the water?
He hasn't finished his analysis, but I've gone back and forth with him on that because I agree with you. It looks like it's going into the water. The researchers who are calling them, they posted their research, by the way, on a website called the Scientific Coalition for Ufology, where if they do further studies like this, they'll post more stuff. So the SCU is how I'll refer to them going forward. But they say it looks like it's going into the water. And everybody said it was going into the water because it was going into the water, and that they've been able to demonstrate because of the reaction of the thermal and where you see some light and dark patches, that shows there was some splashing and it was going into the water. So I asked Mark to say how it looks like it's going into the water. He says it's not. He says that with these sorts of radar, it's detecting thermal. So the object is really dark through most of this video, but when the background is a similar temperature as the object, then the colors will be similar and the object will seem to disappear. I have a problem with that because the only times this seems to happen, the object only seems to disappear when it appears like it's going behind trees or it appears like it's going through water. If this effect was happening, why does it only happen around the trees and around the water? That doesn't make sense to me, especially because the trees in the water are not going to be, the trees are probably not going to be much different than the ground in temperature. If anything, they'd probably be cooler. Same with the water. The water would be cooler. So you would think that the difference between the object and the water would be more drastic, not less. And while it's going over the water and it seems to be above the water, it is much more, there is more contrast between the object and the background. So it appears to go through the water and through the trees. It looks like that's what it's doing. And so that was my thing with it because, people speculated a balloon. But this object did seem to move pretty quickly, and it does move from one point to another. And it seems to move through trees and at one point be over land and one point over water. So what the SCU had found, seems more like what is going on in the video. But Mark, so far, is sticking to that it's a visual effect, and he's doing more analysis to determine if he's right.
Well, please give my best to him. I'm glad to hear he's back at it.
Yeah.
For anyone that doesn't know, Mark D'Antonio had some serious health issues, and we're all pulling for him. Sounds like he's getting back to it, so I'm glad to hear that. So are you going to be doing a podcast about this next week?
Yeah.
All right.
My Monday podcast will be about this. I'll have Robert and Morgan on the show, and we'll talk about it. Also, our UFO update for next week will be about this because there are more developments. There's more people looking at it, including other scientific organizations.
Really? Wow. That's
which
good.
Which have had a positive response. They think the report's good, and they think it's an extraordinary case. So that's very positive. So it's really interesting. I think these guys did an amazing job. And I think one of the trouble, it takes some time to go through a 162-page report. And that's what a lot of is going on right now. Researchers like Mark and others are going through this document. And the researchers are very open to alternative ideas. But they do ask, and I think it's fair, look at their research before you comment, because there's been a lot of that. Look through the research because they've probably addressed whatever your concern is. And if they haven't, they're more than willing to do so.
Well, thanks so much.
They've made themselves very available.
Thanks so much. We ran a little long this time.
Okay.
Almost a half hour, but that's fine. It's been real interesting. And I can't wait to actually listen to those guys talk about it next week.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks again for having me on. And check it out.
And again, people, you can find all these stories through the show notes at podcastufo.com. That'll lead you right over to openminds.tv. And if you hang in there, we'll be coming back live with Ron Kelly in just a minute. Thanks again, Alejandro.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Yep, so talk to you soon.
Just wait for the music break. We'll be right back. Yeah, John Kelly will be right with us. And so just one thing I wanted to say to everyone is I am actually going to be at the Experiencers Speak coming up. It is August 28th and August 29th, and I will be there. And I'd love to see you if you're there. I'm probably going to wear like one of my podcast UFO t-shirts that, you know, nobody buys. Again, I'm going to have new graphics made, and they're coming out really soon. I'm trying to reach John Kelly right now. And so that's August 28th and August 29th, and that's at the Fireside Inn in Portland, Maine. And it should be a great conference. Grant Cameron's going to be there. A number of noted people, Kathy Martin, Denise Stoner. The list is right on their website if you look up Experiencers Speak. And for some reason, I'm having trouble reaching John Kelly. I'll keep trying him here. We just spoke earlier, so I'm not sure what the issue is. I may have him call into the show. And he's been following along, listening to us live, so he may be having some type of technical difficulties on his end. I'm not really sure. All right, so I really apologize, everyone. We're going to try to get this straightened out as soon as we can. And try them again here. So while we're waiting, I have thought about the person that's going to design the T-shirts. They're going to make me three different graphics, and I thought about displaying them somehow on my website. And maybe have a survey and have you pick as a listener out there. John, are you there?
I sure am.
John, are you? I'm hearing a little feedback. Do you have your headphones on? Can you hear me now? John, I can't hear you. Are you muted?
No. Well, allow me to swap out my setup. I'm sorry. We tested. We had tested for this setup, so I will quickly swap.
No. It sounds good now.
Oh, it is good? All right,
yeah, you are good. Welcome to the show. We had a little trouble reaching you.
Well, it's super to be with you guys, and I thank you for your patience.
Yeah. Now, you were on, I think it was April 2012. I'm pretty sure that's when it was. Mm-hmm. So that's going back. So 99.9%. I think we had Scott was our original listener back then. There's a couple of others that have been listening that far back. Peggy, I believe, was listening that far back. So it's going to be all new to the people that are listening. However, I do get email from a number of listeners that go back through all my podcasts, which I really appreciate, and listen, probably have listened to it. So so for the person who hasn't heard of John Kelly, can you tell them a little bit about your background? First of all, you're in, is it Vancouver Island?
Vancouver, British Columbia, which is one of the main ports on the West Coast here on Canada. And I'm a Vancouver native and have been pursuing all kinds of interesting fields of research most of my life, and became widely known publicly in the late 1990s as someone who was interested in what at that time was being referred to as reverse speech, which is the study of unconscious communications encrypted in normal conversation. And I established a grassroots practice and worked with individuals. My practice grew to become an international practice. I ended up as a CBS radio feature producer at one point based on those studies. I became very prominent throughout English-speaking media for my arguments and demonstrations of these phenomena of hidden speech communications. And parallel with that, I developed some very interesting visual catalogs, including high-resolution photography produced during yoga meditation sessions, and as well as documenting through video the local and regional UFO phenomena of the Pacific Northwest, as well as events in Texas, Stephenville, the Marfa Lights, and other interesting areas. Mount Adams, the famous Kenneth Arnold sighting in that region. I've spent extensive time with high sensitivity night vision equipment in that region, taking recordings of different phenomena. So it's something I immersed quite heavily into as an opportune situation, being as I am in the Pacific Northwest, which is a high incident of sightings and accounts and film that come out of this region. I proceeded to write a column for Examiner.com for 4 to 5 years called the Vancouver UFO Examiner, which was very popular and received wide distribution. The articles that I wrote would appear on the front pages of websites such as USA Today or MSNBC, the Irish Independent, Dallas Morning News, and a very long list of English language news publications picked up my stories, my UFO related content and other content, investigative content that I developed. And so I emerged as somebody who had a reputation in media for investigative studies, and took a turn into the UFO subject matter, beginning with the presidency of Barack Obama. And I've been doing field research in this area, again in the field with high sensitivity night vision, and at the same time reporting on some of the issues in related subject areas such as exopolitics. I currently write for newsinsideout.com, the news website that I co-founded with Alfred Lambermont Weber at the end of last year, which was coincident with the time of the wrapping up of my examiner.com column, which is something we'll talk a little bit about, I'm sure, as the interview develops. And newsinsideout.com is where I produce my 2015 mini documentary series, which is a very strong UFO focus. It takes a deeper look at my footage from Marfa, where I have pristine quality Marfa lights, 3 CCD images that I produced on site, as well as the Mount Adams UFO phenomena, the Okanagan, British Columbia UFO phenomena, and many other sort of insights, emphasizing the psychic aspects of contact. And even for the videographers who are out engaging with UFOs, there's evidence that suggests that they're anticipating the events and having their equipment set up on time prior to the incidents, so they get very, very good quality footage. The psychic dimensions of UFO contact appear to be very important, and they're prominent in my research and with the people that I interview and discuss these questions with. And so this is an ongoing theme, I think, in my work, is the encounter with the psychic nature and coming to terms with our own psychic nature. People who engage in these types of studies may find it has awakening powers upon them. They may find they start to see expressions of what could be interpreted as telepathic communications with extraterrestrials as a consequence of participating in sky watches and searching the skies and attempting to document the different things that are out there. Certainly there is a lot out there. People who equip with night vision see a lot further than the unaided eye. And when you expand your pool, so to speak, of phenomena, it's more likely you'll see more phenomena. When you're looking in two different spectra of light, in visible light and in infrared light, both concurrently, you've expanded your opportunities to pick up on some of the unusual stuff that's out there. And it's surprising to most of us, I think, how much unusual stuff does populate the night sky. And that's one of the things I enjoy, particularly this time of year. This is the season to be out. You know, we have the warm nights and so on. This is the season typically where I'm out in the field somewhere studying the skies, hoping to get some exciting footage and to maybe grow my understanding a little bit more about what's happening in the contact arena in a direct way. I'm generally very hands-on. I like research that I can evaluate and measure, and so I've picked these subject areas that I can tinker with and conduct my own experiments. And it's been very productive time. Again, since I became known publicly 15 odd years ago, I've produced a lot of groundbreaking research, the audio studies, photographic and video, and all of it is finding an audience and finding its way, you know, in social media. I think I have a good catalog of independent research, as well as some perspectives on some of the contemporary issues of the day that people are discussing, whether it's disclosure, exopolitics, or other related questions to the UFO phenomenon.
Now, I've been out there a few times, and you don't have a lot of clear skies out there. Is there a season like this time of year? Is it clear a lot more than other times of year?
Summers in Vancouver can be exceptionally good. This being a warmer year than most, we've had more hours of sunshine, I think, than we would normally get. And we got it. We had it early in the season. So for the Vancouver Fraser Valley region, the crops have been triggered due to the excessive sunshine. They started coming out, maturing 2 weeks early. So our harvest seasons have somewhat been skewed because they can't pick the crops fast enough to get them out to market and so on. So that's an indication of how much blue sky time we've had this year. Although where I live is a rainforest. And so we do have excessive dark sky conditions, meaning that we're under cloud or rain for a considerable time of year. Many Canadians are famous as snowbirds who flee the Canadian winter to find sunnier climates, if only for the sake of their mental health. Yeah. But Vancouver does have a longstanding reputation, and I can cite Dorothy Isaacs as someone who had filmed 30,000 feet of 8-millimeter footage of UFO phenomena that was investigated by local university professors and was widely disseminated through U.S. media back in the 1980s. There's many, many paranormal and UFO-related shows from that time. Some of them are on YouTube. You can go back to the way back there and see how much media coverage there was of Dorothy Isaacs' UFOs. And this is a housewife who simply had a personal camera that she took out on her back deck.
I remember, yeah.
In Vancouver, and she got film after film of unusual things, and she eventually published a book. I went to the book launch at the Vancouver Planetarium, and I asked a question from the audience about, what are the mechanics of setting up contact? And she presented it that it was as easy as just participating, that if you had the desire for something to happen, that it could manifest this way, and that people should not be inhibited around exploring these questions in their own personal way, as well as trying to support the organized efforts that are out there as well.
Okay. If you're listening live, we're on with John Kelly, and you can dial in if you'd like at 603-967-4030. And if you'd like to ask a question on the chat room, that's right at podcastufo.com. You mentioned earlier, just a minute ago there, about how the psychic phenomenon can, or there's some type of psychic relationship. And I was, just a couple weeks ago, I was down in Maryland. I did a live show down there with an old-time researcher, Ray Stanford, and he was saying he used to get what he called UFOtopia, like he could feel like he was going to have a sighting, and he felt like upbeat, and he just knew it was going to happen. And that man, Ray Stanford, has had so many sightings. He wouldn't tell me exactly how many, but I know that you've had a lot of sightings as well. And so it is really strange to me, and I'd like to explore your thoughts on why certain people, you always think of UFO hotspots, but secondly, like this woman on the back deck of her at her house filming all this footage, and other people who have an idea like the next day to go out and set up their camera because they're going to have a sighting. I remember you talked about that last time. So how do you suppose this actually happens? What's your thoughts?
I have, this is an enormous topic, but essentially, the premise that I start from is that human beings are born with an existing psychic nature. As to whether it is dormant or active within them, as part of their day-to-day experience, could vary from individual to individual. But I think there is certainly some conception that in Stone Age cultures, the times of all of our ancestors, that the burden on human intuition was very great in order for survival and continuity of the species. And so people living under intense pressure, not in high-tech societies, but under Stone Age conditions, were compelled to use their minds and expand their mental reach in order to survive living in the forest. And so I think that there's an element of the archaic within us. Our ancestors may have been more intuitively developed or active than people, technologically enabled people of the present time, convenience-oriented people, and so on. So I think we are tapping into something inherent within our potential rather than some new invention manifesting in the 21st century, so to speak. As you said, our legacy contactees, and there are many different opinions about reports of the past and the personalities, the many personalities who've reported UFO contact. But one of the lingering threads backed through Adamski and others is the telepathic contact. It's one of the lingering threads, and it persists today. Today, I am in contact with videographers who report intensive interdimensional contact as a part of the milieu within which the videography occurs. In other words, if they weren't having all this out-of-body travel, they may also not be the videographer who shows up with all these different kinds of flying saucers and other things in their footage. So what is happening, I believe, is that viewed from my perspective, the contact experience is offering an opportunity for us, for human beings, to get in touch with our own psychic nature and come to reconcile that, and perhaps at the same time to observe that the cultural environment within which we live, we understand that there are niche minority audiences interested in these types of research fields. And even those who have serious interest in these questions, not simply as some sort of entertainment. Our culture, the mainstream culture here, offers an adversarial environment for many of these kinds of questions. And so, this kind of irony manifests in a context scenario. We begin to become aware of our predominant psychic nature. And then we begin to see the rest of our lives in this context that are we living in harmony with our own innate sense of being, and are we living in harmony with the environment as an expansion of that question. The inner environment and the outer environment are questions about these things are awakened through the contact experience. So just as a natural form of awareness, people may, for example, have persistent dreams in relationship to physical events. They may have dreams about contact or further or deeper levels of contact, like being on board spaceships and having face-to-face time with extraterrestrials in a timeline wherein they're also seeing objects in the sky or filming them or being part of sighting events in different ways. The psychic urges can manifest along the timeline either in ways that are in series, or like sequentially, with physical events or concurrently with physical events or even anticipating the physical events. And this is where we get into the area where we say there are people who appear to be able to anticipate UFO contact and set up so much so that they can set up their camera equipment ahead of time and shoot stable footage during the entire event. I think that's significant. So this appears to manifest, and I don't suggest that this is manifesting with 100% of the population, because I've talked to numerous individuals over the years who've produced what I would consider very profound footage, at the same time who've not really reported that these psychic dimensions were really something that were prominent in their contact experiences. Although someone in the family may be having dreams about abductions or being on board spaceships, it didn't seem to have such direct transparency as in other cases where people are saying, you know, the night before I had a dream where my spirit guide, the extraterrestrial, was telling me to set up my camera. So the next morning I set up my camera and I recorded the UFO. I mean, that's a very direct, linear relationship between those events. So I'm excited that this population, I don't know if it's cultural creatives or Generation X's or, you know, how we could define this community that seems to exist, but there appears to be psychically active participants in UFO contacts all in different parts of the world, and they are becoming more visible and prominent. They're self-publishing. They're using social media to get their experiences out into public discussion, and I see this as this emergent contactee population that will be setting the bar for ufology and research and theories to interpret the data to follow. I see this emergent population as the people that I hope to reach in this window of time that we're in now.
Mm-hmm. I also remember when we spoke before, you mentioned that it's ridiculous to think that if we're seeing a sighting of the same craft, for instance, over in Belgium when they had the triangle, they kept seeing over and over again, and the sightings of the same type of craft over and over again. And I think you said it would be ridiculous to think that they would be going traveling, you know, the light years back to wherever they are and back here again. That's, again, you know, all this is speculation by anyone talking about the subject, you know, whether they can bend space-time and travel instantly or... but your thoughts were that they're here or they're somewhere near here, weren't they? Isn't that what you... that's what you said back, I believe, back in 2012.
Well, I think it's an obvious argument, the idea that someone is going to travel 100,000 light years on a commute to come here for some mysterious mission and be seen by the population. It seemed kind of a stretch. What I'm possibly more open to is this idea of dimensions that may be, you know, parallel and just, you know, one wavelength out from ours and creating a sort of instant proximity. That may also help to interpret instrumental evidence that shows UFOs manifesting and demanifesting.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of behavior is suggestive of what some people in sciences call quantum condensates. But beyond the thoughts of what material properties may explain these manifestation-demanifestation phenomena is transit between dimensions. And it's interesting to note, in parallel to this discussion, is that a 1947 document remains hosted on the FBI.gov website, in which it describes the origins of the UFOs and their occupants as what the Sanskrit term lokas, L-O-K-A-S, as the Romanized Sanskrit. And a loka, in Sanskrit philosophy, this is archaic, classical South Asian philosophy. A loka is a dimension in the mind of God. So this document hosted on the FBI.gov website that says the UFOs are coming from the locas, this is a 1947 opinion. It's hosted there today. It suggests that there's dimensional concepts that are invoked, not unrelated to concepts that were being discussed in Sanskrit literature from thousands of years in the past, where people had concepts of parallel civilizations sharing this environment, and that there was an integration and a flow between the human dramas and the dramas taking place in the other worlds or kingdoms, so to speak, and that sometimes there was commerce between the kingdoms or dimensions and worlds. People moved from place to place. People had struggles and difficulties. Sometimes people and entities killed each other, as described in that literature. So the Sanskrit literature, as we know from Dr. Oppenheimer's concerns regarding becoming gods at the time of the atomic age, in which he is said to have quoted the Gita, and Krishna, the great speaker of the Gita, is talking about all these divine properties, and it was interpreted by the scientists of the time, Robert Oppenheimer being the most prominent of them, that humanity had acquired the power, you know, the power of the universe. Like we could create the heat of the sun on the earth on demand by exploding nuclear materials. So the scientific community, in other words, was very serious about the ideas found in Sanskrit literature. This is not an abstract notion to scientists like Dr. Robert Oppenheimer, is like, you know, one of the fathers of the atomic age. So I say that there is a lot that we can test and measure in the Sanskrit spiritual science that's presented through texts like the Gitas or through direct transmission from teachers in Tantra Yoga and other archaic traditions that are still alive today. People can still study those practices. And I'm one of the people who in fact, did personally study those practices and produced a lot of instrumental material through photography that's related to those studies is quite unique. People who are my friends on Facebook see a number of those photos up there. This is radio, so I can't really show you a photo on the air. But to say that I have a deep investment in those practices and studies, and it's the foundational work from which I see these events. In other words, I bring a yogi's view to the UFO contact question. To some who are participating in UFO contact and extraterrestrial contact questions, there's a sense of absolute outcomes being maybe diplomacy or cultural exchanges or, you know, time on spaceships and other sort of measurables. many claimants, like Billy Meyer, for example, claim to have been on spaceships taking pictures outside the windows and such. So that is seen as sort of, in the UFO contact timeline, that is seen by some as an outcome of participating in this. You know, if I go looking for UFOs, it surely means that down the road I'll be up there, you know, talking to Captain Kirk or somebody, right? But from my perspective, from the yogic perspective, really, the UFO contact is something that happens along the way, but it doesn't serve as a final outcome unto itself. I may or may not be interested in becoming an ambassador for other civilizations. I may or may not be interested in spending time on spaceships. I mean, I may have a lot of things to do right here in the city, you know, without leaving on some spaceships. So I'm not necessarily identifying very strongly with those outcomes, which maybe is a little different considering the hours I have invested, in other words, in contact and documentation. It may seem a little odd that I'm really not pushing, you know, we need to get on the spaceships and go to some other planet or something like that. I'm not really pushing that kind of initiative. I see it as more as educational opportunity. I see it more more directly and immediately relating to psychic development and awakening of consciousness within the individuals as a platform for the expanded consciousness. And I think that is something that's immediate. I think that people can have psychological breakthroughs about sense of limitations, about human behavior and human potential through participating in these events where people are beginning to demonstrate precognition and other kinds of advanced behavioral performance. Then I think that is really consciousness expanding, and I think it is a way to participate in the evolution of the species. These are the kinds of visions that I bring. It's all about the consciousness at the end of the day. I have a lot of instrumental evidence, and I've got a lot of hours in the field. But at the end of the day, it's a state of mind and what we've learned about ourselves, the reflections that occur within our minds as a consequence of these events, I think is really the big takeaway.
Every time I bring up in one of these shows the possibility of interdimensional or dimensional or time travelers or whatever, other than the extraterrestrial, idea of the whole situation, I get email. But, do you theorize your own thoughts? Are your own thoughts that these are more of interdimensional than extraterrestrial?
Well, those are two widely used terms. In producing footage, my footage and experiences don't meet a lot of standards. In other words, I don't have vehicle registration codes, I don't have pilot's licenses, I don't have in cockpit footage. So I may have a sense of who's up there, but I don't have a lot of bona fides, to show you, documentation from their embassy or whatever, right? In other words, this kind of differentiation, I think this is an important part of my research approach, is that these discrete questions don't necessarily hold a lot of water in my world, because at the time of recording, it's inconsequential to me as to the absolute origins of the subject that I'm filming. Hmm. You know, if they are, let's say, hypothetically in possession of dimension shifting technology, there's reasons to believe that that's going on, or they're just traveling so fast when they take off you can't see them. Both those possibilities exist. There's limits on the technology I have disposed to produce those kinds of measurements, but also again, I have limited personal investment in trying to figure out if these are the Romulans or the Andromedans. I mean, my research doesn't attempt to answer those questions. In this way, I'm very vague, you see. While I'm producing all this concrete material evidence is instrumental-based rather than opinion-based, at the same time, I don't care who triggers the awakened consciousness as long as the awakened consciousness manifests as a consequence of those encounters. So it could be the Raelians or it could be the Pleiadians. I mean, I just don't have any investment in those questions so much. So, but I am able to cite the FBI's website and that document that talks about locas and UFOs. I mean, they're hosting the document on their site. That must have had some currency in that organization at some time. It's still on the site.
Yeah,
it's 1977 document.
pretty amazing. Okay, so that's it for this part of the show. If you'd like to listen to the full show, all you have to do is support us for a dollar or more a month, and that information is right on our website, podcastufo.com. And again, for the $10 per month supporters or more, you get a free T-shirt. It could be the existing T-shirt that you can see on our website, or we are having a new design made, new graphics made. Should be a pretty exciting T-shirt if you want to hold out for that. And I want to thank everyone for helping out with the show today, producer Keith. And I want to also thank Alejandro Rojas for the news, our guest, of course, John Kelly. Peggy manages our Facebook page. Remember to like us on Facebook for all the latest UFO news. We have Carrie Lloyd Whitehouse for the music, and also Bruce Rainier, and two fans of the show that help us out with music. And so we'll be here next week with Nick Redfern, always an exciting guest. And so you can listen to us live anytime for free on the Dark Matter Digital Network. And we'll see you next week, right here at Podcast UFO. Keep your eyes to the sky.